Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're going to learn today.
Innovate like a startup. Deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's going to be a great day.
I know you're going to dig this.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Lero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 149. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Arrow, and joining me once again is Mr. John Nicholson. And, John, looks like you got baby in tow.
Yeah, Pete, I was going to say I'm a bit distracted. I'm trying to keep her from eating the microphone.
This is really fun to watch on Zoom. Like, while you're talking, she's going straight for your mic.
It is way too shiny. This is not her fault. So... This is take your daughter to podcast day.
I like it. This is what happens when we have a COVID-19 and the daycare is closed. John becomes baby daddy. I like it. Well, John, we can sit here and talk about your beautiful daughter for the next hour, or we can talk about what's new in vSAN 7. What do you think, man?
Let's do some vSAN 7.
Absolutely. And we can't talk about vSAN 7 without bringing on our good friend, Mr. Pete Keeler, who is Mr. vSAN himself. Pete Keeler, welcome back to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Pete. I almost feel like a regular at this point. So,
I'm telling you.
Yeah. happy to be here, though.
Yeah, we appreciate you, man. I know we've been doing a lot of vSAN lately, especially with the vSAN Deconstructed. Thank you for joining those. Those have been a lot of fun. We've got some really good content coming up with this 7 launch. We're going to be talking about VMware Cloud Foundation. There's a new version of that coming out soon. We've got another great vSphere episode, or just a full, like a core storage vSphere 7 episode, and lots of other good things coming. So, but I'm really excited about this vSAN 7 one because, there's been a couple of really good features that came out of this release, and I'm looking forward to sharing the goodness. We've been working on it for several months, so it'd be nice to finally talk about it in public.
Yeah, this has been a really big effort across the entire company. You know, vSphere and vSAN is really the foundation for everything that we do. And I think for where we are seeing the data center headed, all of the features that we're going to be talking about, that we're going to be showcasing here in the coming days and months, they are going to be critical in order for our customers to be able to make these data centers perform the way that they want.
Absolutely. So Pete, one of the things you do for VMware is, I don't know how you do it, but you're like the master of PowerPoint presentations, and you've designed some really cool content for vSAN 7. I've seen it in there's a video going around for vSAN 7, and it goes through all the what's new. I saw that and I thought this might be a good basis to talk about some of the top features that came out in this release once I saw that video. So why don't we start with maybe the top three, the big ones that came out on this release. We'll start with one that's actually part of vSphere. It's vSphere Lifecycle Manager, or VLCM. Pete, tell us about VLCM.
Yeah, so you know, when we think about lifecycle management, because we know in the industry that that term is referenced so much and it can mean so many different things. But in the terms of a virtualization administrator, we sort of have to step back and think about what that has meant for them. Now, initially, it was always this process of simply updating the hypervisor. And of course, we all know what that was like. And, yep. And that's where we built the vSphere Update Manager, or VUM. And that was really geared toward just updating the hypervisor. Now, of course, there would be other elements to that that you may have to introduce, like specialized drivers and things of that sort. But one of the things that has come up to be a little bit more important over the years is the firmware that is running on the discrete physical components on those servers.
Oh, yeah.
And even more so in these hyperconverged arrangements. So we needed to sort of take a step back. VMware needed to take a step back and look at how could we create a framework or this arrangement that allows for our vendors and these manufacturers of this hardware to be able to provide a mechanism that allows the virtualization administrator to not only update the hypervisor and its respective drivers, but also to focus on the firmware for the various elements of that server. So that's where we sort of came up with this vSphere Lifecycle Manager, or VLCM.
So what's the difference between that and VUM? Because I know VUM did that in a rolling upgrade fashion for ESXi. I think at one point I remember seeing some firmware also being part of VUM to a limited extent. But what is the key differentiator here?
Yeah, so there's a couple of different ways to think about the differences between VUM and VLCM. The first part is that VLCM is really treating this notion of updates as a cluster-centric process. So instead of looking at each individual host and running the actual updates and maybe applying drivers or firmware to these respective hosts, the management entity that you're going to be looking at in VLCM is going to be at the cluster level. And that really makes a lot of sense because when you think about it, vSAN is a cluster-based solution. So we want to get away from this notion of, kind of treating each physical host like a special snowflake, but really apply this level of consistency across the host within that cluster. So then the second element of that is looking at how we could apply this level of consistency across these respective hosts. When you think about that process of updating, you would go into each individual host and run those updates, but then make sure the drivers are there for just that discrete host.
Yep.
So we wanted to take a more modern approach, which would be a desired state imaging of the respective hosts that live in that cluster. And this is really an outcome-oriented framework where we can say, this is the end result that we are looking for, and it will build an image that is based off of those conditions. And that image comes from our respective partners, as well as internally here at VMware. And this desired image will then be applied to all respective hosts within that cluster.
Okay, so ESXi version, as well as specific firmware tied to a type of server. So if I've got like Dell servers or whatever, or
drivers servers,
then drivers and firmware, and then the ESXi all wrapped into sort of a one desired state image. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
I like that. That's a nice framework. I know there are things that already do that. Like, for example, if I was on VxRail, I could already do that with VxRail Manager. So I'm guessing this is probably more for like vSAN ready nodes.
Yeah. And I think, oftentimes you see this model being used in, let's say, even other applications and managers. You can look at something like Puppet or Ansible. They sort of use this similar desired state approach as that end result, so that you're defining the outcome and then you're letting the solution actually apply that to those respective hosts. One of the important things here that we're really trying to accomplish in the long term is that we know that if something takes a little bit of time when you're working on one host or two hosts or three hosts, that does not necessarily scale well when you're dealing with 300 hosts, 400 hosts, or 500 hosts.
Yeah.
So we really want to take this approach that this is something that is going to make things easier to manage at scale.
Well, I like that point at the end there. You talked about being able to as you start trying to consolidate these patching together, reduce the number of reboots, that's a big deal. But the other thing, I love that term desired state. And one of the really nice things from a lifecycle basis of that is it also detect your ability to control anything that's reverted something. So this is something people don't think about, but if you have a part fail, and let's say you have a NIC die and you get, or an HBA or a drive die, and you get a replacement, that replacement's probably been sitting in a warehouse since time before your career started, possibly, and it's going to have an ancient firmware that is possibly going to have a very negative reaction with a modern driver. Apparently, hardware manufacturers don't revision test N-25 on driver firmware. Who knew? And so having something that says, wait a minute, this is supposed to be at this firmware. I saw a NIC there. It disappeared and it came back, and this is not the right baseline. Let's go get that reverted. That's a big deal.
Oh, it's a tremendous deal. And that when you think about the importance of, let's say, a modern day network interface card, and that's probably one of the devices that is the most overlooked in terms of what firmware is being used on those physical hosts. But it can be one of the most important because the drivers are really designed with the assumption of a given level of firmware that is being used.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And you don't just want to get the latest, greatest driver from, you know, some default catalog or something that's going to basic, you know, because that potentially might not be on the HCL for vSAN or even for vSphere. So I like the idea of creating a desired state that has certified drivers, firmware, and gives you that ability to, at a very massive scale, have consistency and also protect against drift. That's pretty smooth.
Yeah. And, you know, the entire goal in all of this is when we think about what our customers need and what are those day-to-day operational activities that are occurring for them, how can they look at this in a much simpler way? And we know that when you're managing a cluster, oftentimes, and this would be the case where if there were updates being made to maybe all 8 hosts within a given cluster, but one of them happened to miss one of the drivers that was needed, some asynchronous driver that was provided by the manufacturer, then for some reason that wouldn't be detected as an issue until there was some problem at some point. Maybe there were some connectivity issues with that specific host.
Yeah.
Now we can be able to much more easily detect that difference than remediate based off of the fact that we've identified that that a desired state is not the same as all of the other hosts.
I like it. I like it. So is this something that works with VUM or do you have to have one or the other? How does that work?
So that's a good question, Pete. So right now, VLCM is a new feature introduced in vSphere 7, but the vSphere Update Manager or VUM also exists. And so the customer is going to be able to get to choose between one or the other on a per cluster basis. And that's really provided in such a way to ease this transition for many of our customers, as there will be some additional requirements about the various hardware manufacturers and what OEM systems are fully supported. And so in these particular cases, we have support for certain generations for both Dell and HPE.
Yeah, the latest, greatest. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, well, listen, I think this is an exciting start to something that's going to probably be around for a really long time. So yeah, I'm excited. I like when stuff first comes out and you get to see where they're going. I think this is definitely something that we'll be talking a lot more in the future of VLCM. So good stuff. All right, so let's move on. I know that's not the only thing on vSAN 7. There's also some talk of file services. Can we say it out loud?
We can say it out loud, yes. vSAN 7 will support and provide support for file services. And this is something that's just all managed right within vCenter. So no longer does somebody have to have a separate filer that's sitting over in the corner, or they need to spin up VMs, for instance, in order to provide that file services functionality. This is all native right within vSAN. And it's really going to offer a lot of flexibility for many of our customers there, especially as we get into this world in which you have many workloads that are next generation workloads, Kubernetes that may need some persistent volumes. Now they can be even served up via these NFS services that are provided right within vSAN.
On the container and the cloud native use cases, what's really interesting is that, we already had a CSI driver, so we could call a block device, but you couldn't multi-write that. You couldn't have multiple VMs doing that. Even if you were kind of a masochist and wanted to do like a clustered file system between containers, which sounds like the opposite of every cloud native design I've ever seen. Really, if you want to do multi-write volumes, you're doing an NFS share. And what's nice is that we've got within the 7.0 CSI driver, for those of you who are already running out containers and you can just plug this in, this will give you the ability to not only summon block VMDKs, these first class disks, but also NFS shares for share access. And so this can be useful if you're running, say, like a web farm and you have a common content catalog, or you'd want to just create a log share where you dump all the logs to as your debugging application. There's a lot of interesting use cases there.
And we extend, you know, this feature uses sort of that theme that we've been talking about so much in terms of a policy-based infrastructure. And for that, for vSAN, that really means storage policy-based management. Here, we use that same model for the file level services that we're offering here, and that when a user creates a share, they get to select the given storage policy that's going to define the level of space efficiency or level of resilience for that given file share. So it's from a management construct, it's very similar to anything that they've been doing already right within vSAN. And it's a cluster level feature that they can choose to enable or not enable.
Okay. What protocols am I going to be using with this for NFS?
So in vSAN 7, we are supporting NFS version 3, as well as NFS version 4.1.
Okay. And does that mean that anything that I've done with NFS, say in traditional arrays, this is what I could also do with this vSAN file services? I think that's the question I've gotten a lot from folks in general is, what are the use cases for vSAN?
So I'll start actually with what not to do. The first thing is do not mount this as a data store and then put a bunch of VMs on it and try to boot them. running virtual machines from this is not it's not what this was built for. That was not what it was intended for. It is not supported.
Wait, so I shouldn't put a data store inside of this as inside of my VM?
Yeah, let's put data stores inside of data stores to run our virtual machines on. And then we'll export, and then that VM will of course have its own NFS export. And we'll build that, you know,
I saw that movie.
That endless circular loop back of storage virtualization that we always dreamed of. So no, that's not the goal here.
All right. So we know what not to do. Pete, why don't you tell us what we can do?
Yeah, no. So, this really brings up a great point here in that, you know, we, especially when we're debuting some sort of a feature, generally we want to focus on what's going to be most important for that customer. And so with this example here, file services in vSAN 7 are really targeted initially here for cloud native workloads that need persistent volumes, as well as some traditional workloads that maybe needed an NFS share that was being served up, you know, simply somewhere else. I think those are really the two use cases that will be served really well in this environment.
Sweet. Yeah. So VLCM, native file services, and obviously the enhanced cloud native storage, which is also kind of wrapped in as well into the file services story. Those are some pretty big things to come out in a 7.0 release. But I know there's been a lot of other enhancements as usual, and I think some of those are pretty exciting. Why don't we touch on some of the interface enhancements, some of the performance enhancements? Just take your pick, Pete.
Sure. Yeah. So we had a number of new improvements here with relation to stretch cluster topologies. And some of these, you know, it's interesting when we think about the idea of a stretch cluster. We have to be so mindful of the variety of conditions that a stretch cluster can run into versus a traditional or a standard vSAN cluster. We have to make accommodations for all of that.
That is a really nice way of saying there are a million things that can go wrong in a normal data center, and 100 million that can go wrong in any type of geo-distributed data center topology.
Yeah, I think I like your description a little bit better there, John, on that. But
failure is not binary, and it increases exponentially with latency and distance. That sounds much more poetic or engineering like, I feel like.
Your daughter
agrees.
Are
you getting squeals? Yeah, I know. So
she's like, Daddy, tell them about two-node topologies.
Yeah, we've also made some improvements here when you run through the process of replacing a witness host. Which is something that we introduced a few versions back in terms of what the customer would see in the vCenter UI. It was a very easy process in terms of just being able to replace that witness host. But one of the challenges was that once a user would run through that, they would have to sort of wait for vSAN to understand that is the new witness host appliance or the virtual witness host appliance. Now we've made it part of the workflow. So it will trigger a metadata update basically at the point that this witness host replacement occurs so that then you have all three points in this stretch cluster fully up to date, and it's sort of regained its full level of resilience. And we've also made a nice improvement with regards to some capacity handling or capacity management here in a stretch cluster arrangement. This can come up in a scenario in which you have a stretch cluster that's really capacity constrained, and let's say to the point that you have almost reached the cluster
threshold
condition. Mm-hmm. At that point, what it's going to do now is that on the site that it sees that near a capacity full condition, it's going to mark that object as absent. And what that's going to allow it to do, what it's going to allow vSAN to do, is allow that VM to continue processing that front-end VM IO so that the ongoing operations of that VM will continue, as opposed to reaching what it would otherwise see as an out-of-capacity condition. So this is really just pushing that uptime even further. And in this particular case, it would be in a reduced level of resilience, but then would be able to regain that level of resilience once you address that capacity full condition in one of the sites.
Hmm. Oh, okay. Okay.
Well, and there has been some attempts to help out with the monitoring on that, I know with VROPS, but it's nice to see that that's just operationally some automation to help remediate those situations being put into the back end.
Sorry, I'm really enjoying John's multitasking. Man, you're good at it so far.
Good thing he's got those wireless headphones, right?
He keeps trying to rip the mic off. I had to like jam it back in. So
very nice. Also, I saw something about VM capacity reporting. There's been some enhancements to the interface to show you what your capacity looks like. How's that changed?
Yeah. So one of the things that our customers have noticed over the years when they're running a vSAN environment as compared to a traditional three-tier storage is that occasionally they would look at what was being reported in terms of the capacity used for a given VM within the vSAN portion of the vCenter UI versus that traditional storage. And it wouldn't necessarily match up. And there was actually a good reason for that, is that when we were developing the method to provide capacity information within vCenter, that all predates vSAN and sort of the approach that we use for vSAN and that object-based storage. And so vCenter would sometimes interpret those values as being different versus what you might find in the very vSAN-centric portion of the vCenter UI. So if you were looking at all of the VMs that were enumerated just in a long list at the cluster view, you might see some, you know, some things that don't necessarily add up. In vSAN 7, we resolved all that so that now that's fully consistent. And because that's all API driven, now you have things like vRealize operations that now will also be able to report accurately against what the actual usage is for those respective VMs.
So previously in vSAN, I would look at the capacity of a specific VM and it would be inaccurate. Would it be inflated, or would it look like it was using more capacity than it was, or vice versa? And now that's more accurate. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So the big differences were when you would be looking at the provisioned space and the used space for a given VM right within vCenter. It would show up differently than what was actually being used, and came down to some technical details on how we render swap files and things of that nature as to the cause why that didn't necessarily add up. But now that's fully been worked out and is now also extended out to other solutions that use those very same APIs.
I also saw that vSphere replication is actually really highlighting a lot better in there of what's replicated VMs to understand the overhead for data protection from that regard.
Yes, and that's another great feature that here was included in vSAN 7 is now that we have full visibility to VMs that are protected by vSphere replication, so that when you're looking at the target site and you're wondering how much data is being consumed or what VMs actually are being protected at that target site, you can see that right in the listing. We're going to enumerate out based off of what VMs are actually being protected, yeah, and the fact that they are an object from a vSphere replication job. And it just makes things so much easier. Also, in terms of understanding what your cluster capacity usage is really being consumed by. Previously, that would just simply show up as an unknown object. So,
well, and for those of you sitting at home thinking, wow, I love this pretty new capacity graph, this is a reminder to go listen to some old episodes and reclaim that space if you've got some usable space. Because here's the thing, it'll line up all within the vCenter UI, but you're gonna go look in your guest and say, this guest only uses 20 gigabytes, why is it the VMware showing 40?
Yeah,
go dig back into the back episodes. SCSI unmap, it's time to get your space back, America. Let's do it. I have to make that pitch anytime we're talking capacity.
Absolutely.
I'm like a broken record. The other thing also with replication here, which I'm sure, I don't want to steal too much of Kato's thunder, I'm sure we'll talk more about this, but I also saw that vSphere replication is going to auto resize replicas.
Ooh, I hadn't heard that one.
Yeah, and actually I hadn't heard that one either. So I'll be looking forward to hearing about that more as well.
Yeah, that's tied with the new SRM version beyond the vVol support. We'll have a whole episode, I'm sure, on that, but.
What I did hear, which is super exciting, is the memory consumption views that have changed inside of vSAN services.
Yes, this has been a long requested feature for many of our customers who simply wanted to understand how much memory was being used on their respective vSAN hosts.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, this part always varied for many of our customers because it was highly dependent on the number of data services that they were running in their environment, which was unique for them. And then the actual host configuration. So how many disk groups you have, how many physical devices within the disk group. And so there were a lot of these different variables. And we provided a knowledge base article to help them better understand what that would be. But now right within the UI, they're able to see what the running consumed memory is just for vSAN services on that respective host. So they can much better understand what the effective amount is in their environment. And this is all through just a single metric over the course of time, just like all of their other vSAN metrics.
Now, is this just real time or is this something that you can see over a period of time, or is this just as you're looking at your memory consumption on the spot, or do you have like more options?
This will render exactly like all of the other metrics in the vSAN performance service. So you're going to have the ability to show it over a course of time and between 1 and 24 hours, and then that can go back up to a maximum of about 90 days.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I think that's going to be very popular. That's good. Awesome. All right, we're running out of time here, Pete. I know there were some hardware improvements as well, so maybe we can finish with a couple of those and then take off.
Sounds good, Pete. So yeah, there were two specific improvements made with this version of vSAN. One is that we have support for much larger storage devices for vSphere and vSAN 7. And this is just going to offer a lot more flexibility for our customers who are trying to figure out, should they scale out or should they scale up? And we know that the industry changes quickly in terms of the densities of those storage devices. So, and this simply adds that much more flexibility for our customers. Now, when you're adding much larger storage devices, of course, you always want to factor in, well, what other things do I want to consider in terms of scaling? And mm-hmm. So, you know, you'll want to be mindful of saying, okay, well, if I'm going to be increasing the density to a pretty massive degree on each host, you know, maybe it's time to revisit what your networking looks like so that we have a proper balance where you can evacuate data in you know, the timeframes that you would want. And then the other advancement that we've made, and this is, again, something that relates to both vSphere and vSAN, is the support of hot plug devices that are NVMe-based. Many of our customers are used to this process for SaaS-based devices.
Yep.
But always, it was a little bit more of a struggle in terms of NVMe-based devices. But we know how popular those are becoming, so we had to make some efforts in order to make these fully compatible. Now, initially, this is going to be focused on certain generations of servers, just basically translate that to the most modern versions of the respective servers by the manufacturers.
Well, and some of this comes from, if you look at the original NVMe 1.0 spec, I want to say when we had Jay Katz or someone on here talk about it, hot plug wasn't even in the spec. Like they kind of jumped the gun just because there were flash devices that were so fast, SAS was limiting them. So it's good to see the operational tooling catch up.
I agree. All right, Pete, man, that's a mouthful for one release. I know that there's a lot of information on Storage Hub, on VirtualBlocks. There's been several blogs that have gone out about this, obviously VMware.com as well. So lots of great content for vSAN 7. The most important question, though, Pete, is do you have plenty of toilet paper? Do you have all of the supplies that you need in your house? Are you ready for COVID-19?
Well, I think to answer your question, you know, I think since many of us are used to working from home, especially on our respective team,
yeah,
I think we may have been more prepared than others in this scenario. So, so yes, I'm good on my side.
Pete, I have all of the toilet paper. My wife had 2-liter bottles of hand sanitizer on subscription from Amazon. I'm so prepared that like, you know, I'm just ready to get vSAN 7 and I'll actually probably install it as part of VCF 4 that's coming out, obviously. I'm going to get that up in the lab as soon as possible, the GA builds, and just go to town. I'm so excited to get all this going.
Nice. I like it. VCF 4. Yeah, we're going to have that one coming up pretty soon. We got to get Kevin Tabera on here as well. And I actually, what was suggested to me, and I think it's a great idea, do a deconstructing VCF, do an episode even leading up to the four before four goes GA. We should just do a whole episode and just break down what VMware Cloud Foundation is, because I think a lot of folks, they might not really get that yet. So, and this is definitely something that's becoming more popular and more prevalent. So we need to do a deconstructing VCF coming very soon. What do you think?
I like it. There's a certain NFS usage over there. I was actually have a bunch of questions I need to go ask them about. So nice. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. Kevin's always great too. He's got all the answers. So we need to get him on soon. So good stuff. Pete, thank you so much for sharing all the vSAN 7 goodness. And we will leave links to all of the stuff that we've mentioned so far on the show notes of this podcast page. But yeah, man, thanks for joining us once again.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Pete. And you too, John.
You know, for what little bit I was on here. So I feel like I actually got some words out while feeding she's being very fussy.
You did very good at multitasking.
Yeah, you did great, man. I thought you managed that well, so...
All right, well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. A big thanks to our friend Pete Keeler for talking vSAN 7. We're back next week, but until then, wash your hands.
Enough of this jibber jabber.